You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1, for workers, by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10-plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.
Baba, bon dia, Manny.
What's going on, Phil? Bon dia.
Another day. It's been a long, long time since we've done a bon dia.
We haven't done
one. I think it was once.
That's okay, just man. Once. Early birds.
Everyone's going to learn. Everyone's going to figure it out, man.
Early birds, Manny. That's the best time.
How was your morning this morning?
My morning was good. Woke up nice and early. I was up at 5.
Was it me or was it everybody? Was there less traffic on the road?
Coming this way to Oakville, it was less traffic.
Yeah, so what's going on? You playing hooky today?
Probably. After the snowstorms we got.
It was nothing compared to Detroit's in ice right now.
They had a busted water main, and then that all froze over, so the entire
cars are stuck in
ice.
I swear to you, it's the apocalypse going on.
Nah,
then we had the plane crash.
Yeah, that one's a little crazy.
Now there's more videos coming out talking about conspiracy. Because the plane's been moved, but it's been put in the exact same. I don't know. Like, I think everything is a conspiracy today.
It's hard to believe everything you see. And it's just really hard these days. And it definitely makes you want to question a lot of things. And I think a lot of people are in that question mode. Like, why did this happen? Who did this happen? Who was flying? What was it? How much training? How much right? And it's good to be in that question mode because I think we should be questioning a lot of things that are happening around us. But sometimes things are just things, man, you know, but
life goes on, man. Sometimes
definitely a lot of plane crashes this year.
In 1 year so far, in 2 months, you're over 80 crashes.
I think so. That's what it was.
Where do you want to begin? You want me to share this comment that was left on YouTube?
Yeah.
How about the last show?
Yeah. So our last show was on AI and robotics.
Yeah, which was a great show. I'm still scared about it.
Why?
You keep sending me more and more scary shit because it's reality.
I just keep on forwarding what I find.
I know, but it's reality. It's no longer science fiction movies anymore.
No.
This is shit from the 80s and 90s that was science fiction then, but now it's reality today. Yeah,
and I think a lot of the feedback we've gotten is, you know, it's not really about what we're showing on the show or what we're talking about. I think a lot of the debate is just a matter of when is it going to happen? 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, not in our lifetime. You know, and a lot of people, I think the majority of the people that we asked that responded, you know, like, oh, this will only happen in 20 years from now or 15 years from now.
Sooner than that.
I don't know. Some sectors will take 20 years or 30 years or 50 years or never. And then some sectors, you know, by the end of 2025, they're going to replace 50% of the robots.
Think about music and think about telecommunications, and like the turning point was 2009. Once iPhone just dropped all that stuff.
Well, yeah, man.
It went quick. It went real quick.
Technology, it has a way of moving really quick, especially if a lot of money is being poured into a certain type of technology. You know, and again, just a reminder to everybody, comments, we're just two Portuguese guys talking about robots and AI.
We find stuff and we talk about
that's
it.
All we're
simple
doing,
as that, right?
And some people may say, oh, Philippine, all that. And I think that YouTube comment, you know, you guys are interpreting it wrong and that's not the case and da 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 da. And they might be correct, right? But
the point of that show was we were saying that this is coming regardless of how your opinion is on this thing.
Well, hey, listen, anything can derail it, I guess, right? But again, I don't know. You know, everyone might revolt against technology. Who knows? It's hard to predict what's happening these days, Manny, because I think so far I haven't gotten any of the things that have happened on my bingo card for 2025. I haven't gotten any of those correct. But it's hard to predict what's going to happen, you know? But one thing's for sure, billions of dollars is being poured into this industry between AI and if anybody's been following the stock market and AI companies, just like NVIDIA, for example, just going through the roof. And maybe NVIDIA isn't an AI company. Maybe they're processors or whatever. But that being said, you know, this is just observations. And, you know, is it coming? Yes, in my opinion. Yes.
The real question, I guess, is how much of construction is going to be displaced by it?
Well, listen.
After that show that you did, we put together, I think it was a lot more than what I originally thought.
I think so, too. And I think, you know, even if some sectors in construction don't get displaced or robots don't go in there. But some of those videos we showed, them building high rises in 19 days and doing roads completely out of drones and AI, you know, the technology exists. They're doing it. China's doing it.
Then you can apply it. So I do want to share it. At Forest 9987. You guys are misunderstanding the data. Those people won't be replaced by AI. The study specifically says transform about their respective field roles, meaning those are the positions that are most likely to benefit from AI helping them. Yes and no. Everything starts with an assistance, but then it becomes a replacement. That's just me. But also take note that it says a lot of those positions are critical in the economy, so replacing them outright would do more harm than good, and says that AI would expand and alter their current tasks. To be honest, I'm getting really tired of this AI craze anyways, and tired of people talking about it who don't understand what it really is. AI has plateaued. I disagree with that.
I think
we're not really making major improvements. I disagree with that. The glorified if-else conditional tree has reached its peak performance and is showing major diminishing returns. That's kind of like saying the iPhone has plateaued.
The iPhone probably has plateaued.
I don't think so.
What else can they put into that?
Data collection and data manipulation.
They're already doing. Technology does sooner or later, version 1, version 2, version 3, version 10, and then it's just like, okay, how many times can we do this same song and dance, right? But I think AI is on a different level. You know, once AI can start creating itself and AI can start programming and AI can start injecting itself into robots, I think it becomes, we cross that threshold. But again, who knows? Again, we're just two Portuguese guys talking about robots and AI, man. And we're not authorities on it. Please don't beat us up.
We got to get a Portuguese AI guy.
Just
scientist or some sort of program. I don't but know. Is there?
I don't, maybe. What's the Portuguese contribution to AI and robotics, man?
I don't know. I'm not this, man. That's, I don't know. Oh, that's it, eh? I would not want a nata that's made by a robot.
Manny, I feel like you would eat it and you wouldn't even know.
I don't think so.
No?
I think it would be the equivalent of saying you can't tell the difference between Coke and Pepsi.
I can.
That's C?
Yeah, I guess
I can.
So. Yeah, no.
I think it'd be, I bet you any money if you give me two and I try one, I'd be like, why does this one taste a little funny?
Listen, man.
I don't know.
Who knows I'm what's coming down the...
AI chefs.
AI chefs now.
Bakers.
But again, listen, I personally think it's just a matter of when. That's it. Yeah. And in specific sectors, that when is going to take longer than others. But in the easier sectors, such as
manufacturing
and automotive and stuff like that, and you're watching these factories that are 90% robots, 95% robots, it's hard to deny the evidence that's right there in front of you. They're doing it.
You remember you actually talked about Amazon. I had some guests on this show recently. A couple of weeks ago, but the show just dropped yesterday. Amazon's not in Quebec.
Yeah, I know. We talked about that.
No, I thought it was just one facility.
No, it was seven facilities or something. They all just picked up and left.
Yeah. So Amazon is not in Quebec.
No. And I'm sure they got a lot of tax because exemptions. Of
the union. Yeah. But I'm the sure unions are the one that forced them out.
I don't know about forced them out, but
convinced them.
No, they ran into some difficulties with the union and the workers, and it just became not worth it for them.
Do you think that's just a postponement?
No, they picked up and left.
But you don't think they're going to come back into the market?
I think these companies are big enough to pick and choose where they go. And the atmosphere or the environment needs to be favorable to them. And if it's not, they won't go.
Think about what you would do here in Ontario if you didn't have Amazon.
If I didn't have Amazon?
Yeah. Do you shop Amazon?
No.
I shop Amazon.
Well, hey, listen, whatever. I don't know. But...
I was surprised that I didn't realize that it was the entire province.
Yeah, no, they just picked up and left.
I thought it was just one facility.
No, they're like, this is way too much headaches. We don't need these headaches. We're here to bring you business and money, and you guys are just giving us headaches, so later.
Interesting. All right, what are we going to talk about today?
So today's episode is just kind of some loose items from previous episodes and stuff that we've discussed. A couple little updates on this CORE and ISO situation that's happening in Ontario. And actually, we got a video and a breakdown of a supervisor that just got sentenced to 5 years in jail.
Recently?
Yeah, not a construction supervisor. This is in the trucking industry, I think.
And yeah. It was a death involved.
Yeah. We'll cover it. There's a news article and a video on it. We'll watch the video.
Wow.
But 5 years criminal negligence.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a heavy one. So far, I think that's the biggest one.
5 years. And then I think I asked you off mic, is he actually going to serve the 5 years? We don't know.
I'd like to think
that's
so.
That's the crown at that position. It's got nothing to do with safety at that point.
I don't even know if it's the crown at that position. I think once you get into the system, you know, maybe you get released on good behavior, or maybe you do something to shorten your sentence, something along those lines. But yeah, maybe the crown's involved. I'm not sure. I've never spent longer than 2 days in jail, so. I don't know.
The only jail time I spent was when we were shooting in jails, and then we were able to walk around and shit like that. Same with morgues and stuff. That was all freaky shit, man.
I know. I've done some inspections in jails as an officer.
Really?
Yeah, man.
That must be a little...
I had to respond to a complaint because a co-worker had locked the other guy in the jail cell.
What do you mean the other guy?
It was another worker. They were building a jail. Is that youth jail out in Brampton.
And he locks his co-worker?
They got into some altercation and he tossed them inside the jail cell and he closed it. But once you close this jail cell, these doors, these units.
That's it. They're stuck. They're closed.
There's no sound. You can't hear anything. And the phones don't work. So this guy was in the unit and he was in there for like 4 hours.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
What happens to the other guy?
The other guy left him in there.
No, but did he get fined?
No, he didn't get fined. There's a workplace violence and harassment thing and da-da-da-da-da, and no one pressed charges.
Well, it's like everybody circumvent the whole court system. You're already here, so just take the guy who got in prison and put the guy who put him in there and leave him there.
They definitely skipped a few steps there in that process. But yeah, no, he tossed him in there, he closed the door, and 4 hours the guy spent inside that jail cell.
It's probably a long 4 hours, eh? For him.
Can you imagine being in the jail cell? You're screaming, trying to call. No one's hearing you. Workers are walking by.
If that was me, I'd be doing all the cliche kind of nobody knows.
Oh, like, man.
That kind of shit. Or Roxanne. I'd be doing Roxanne. Eddie Murphy. 48 hours.
I know. I got it. Yeah. I'm from the 80s, man. I was born in 1980. All right,
let's get into it.
All right. So the first item that we're talking about today, City of Toronto. So this one's for all the safety professionals, the ISO companies, the core companies, the companies that bid on City of Toronto projects.
Basically all the companies that need all this certification to bid.
The accreditation, to bid on these projects, right? So unfortunately in Ontario, we got a mix, I guess at this stage now, of what the municipalities are accepting for the accreditation. Some only accept CORE, some accept whatever the Ministry of Labor accepts.
Why not just accept all of them? If they're all recognized, why not just accept all of them?
That's a good question. And why are certain cities and municipalities accepting some and not the other and this and that? And this is the note that came out to one of my clients or an email. Please note, the City of Toronto will now require ISO certificates to be issued by a certification body that is accredited by an accreditation body recognized by the International Accreditation Forum.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought all of those accreditations are recognized by... Are they not?
No, they're not. CORE is not recognized outside of Canada. No one even knows who CORE is outside of Canada.
But you're building...
ISO is internationally recognized.
But building in your own backyard. So why do we need an international accreditation authorization?
Well, listen, this is just levels, right? I think the issue here, and we'll get into it.
You know what I smell? I smell unions. I smell certain companies getting certain jobs just because of the accreditation.
So in the city's view, the IAFCL provides confidence that ISO 45001 certification was obtained through an audit that meets the ISO 17021-1 auditing standard to ensure impartiality, competence, and consistency. IHSA's guideline for ISO 45001-2018 to CORE 2020 equivalency also states that the IHSA will only accept ISO certificates with the IF seal. This change, as of March 31st, means that those that have a non-IAF ISO 45001 certificate will need to obtain a certificate through the IAF accredited certification body to bid in Ontario. So City of Toronto is the only city that's asking for this additional component. And this is beyond what the Ministry of Labor and Associate Program are requiring. So there's some issues here. Like, why does the city recognize this additional requirement? you know, why does the SOSI program even require this, which it doesn't, you know, and why so does
really going on?
Why does IHSA only recognize ISO with IAF for core equivalency? So these are questions that safety professionals are having. And these are questions that employers are having, determining which accreditation to go to or which one best suits their company. And then the question really comes up is, and you, Manny, you're not in our industry, but if I explain to you how this went down, you tell me what you think about it. So you have all the municipalities in Ontario that do not require, and this is going back 10 years, 15 years, well, I mean, maybe not 15, but 10 years, that do not require any accreditations. Okay, we go from zero accreditations.
Yeah.
Anybody can bid on the City of Toronto projects, away we go, right?
Open outside market. Of the Toronto.
Well, bidding on projects that are for City of Toronto projects, for example. Let's just take City of Toronto. So zero accreditations required, anyone can bid. And then they come up with this core. And core is accreditation. This was created in Alberta, and I think it's only implemented in BC, Alberta, and Ontario, or something along those lines. Now then the City of Toronto says, we only accept core accredited programs. Okay, so only a handful, very small, few at the beginning, could bid on these projects. So then you keep going a bit, and then you have the SOSI program created by the MOL, and the MOL says, okay, well, for you to be part of the SOSI program, we accept this, 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 yeah. and this. Right? But the municipalities were only accepting core. Then the push came, hey, you guys got to accept what the Ministry of Labor accepts. Otherwise, like, who are you guys? Who's the City of Toronto compared to the Ministry of Labor? Mm-hmm. So then you have, okay, we'll accept all the ones that the Ministry of Labor accepts, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you have the next step above, right? Which is, we're going to accept this accreditation, but only if it has this, which is the IAF and stuff. And, you know, it's not difficult to get this IAF seal, which is what's going to happen to my clients that are ISO. But that being said, you start looking at the situation. And what does it sound to you, Manny?
You know what it sounds to me?
And wait, before you answer, the IHSA is the one that pushes core and is the only accredited or only association that's allowed to manage core in this province. Go.
How is that? That's kind of a monopoly, no?
You tell
me. Here's my thought. My thought process is that from speaking to a lot of young and upcoming companies that want to get to this big company position mm-hmm. and get tendering onto these projects, municipal mm-hmm. projects, prevent whatever it is, right? They first off start by getting the accreditation.
Mm-hmm.
And then what
which
happens...
Which is a process,
and I get it, which makes a lot of sense that you should be getting this accreditation, so you get it. But now you got the top dogs going, wait a minute, now we're getting too much competition. We need to streamline that competition. Here's the streamline. This is what I think this is going on.
So you are probably correct, right? The question comes down to, and as safety professionals, looking at all of this from the outside in, because I have no vested interest, you know, I can make core happen for any of my clients and I can make ISO happen for any of my clients. But that being said, what is this really about? Is this still about safety?
Nope.
Or is this about control, manipulation?
It's corruption. It's whoever's going to get the job.
Right? And why only the City of Toronto?
So you know what's going to happen? I think the smaller companies will just get accredited with everything.
You can't.
They don't allow that now.
You can't get accredited. It's two different formats, right? Either you're going
this. Core and ISO. And
that's the thing. Core isn't interchangeable. Their safety system isn't interchangeable or able to merge with other accreditations. Like ISO is international and they have a variety of different 45,000. I know, it's just one big cluster.
This is the big companies thinning their herd. That's what this is.
Well, this sounds like that. And
it smells like that.
And it like definitely that. Smells like that. If it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck.
That's exactly what they're doing.
Right? And again, how many companies are accredited in Ontario? I think it was 700 at last check.
How many are bidding?
I'll say all 700 are bidding right now.
So now if you're the top companies that are constantly getting the same contracts from the City of Toronto, you want to be competing against those other companies?
Again, maybe, and I know this works with some of my clients, they sit in rooms and boardrooms and with other people, and they determine who's going to be bidding on a project.
Oh, I know. We know the game.
Right? They play that game. Yeah. Oh, you're going to sub this project out. You're going to work here. And this stuff is all predetermined.
Yeah, I know.
And now with the infrastructure and the province announcing and the government announcing, federal government, all these billions of dollars that they're going to be spending on infrastructure, you know, the health, the high-rise and low-rise residential sectors are reeling right now. This is, there's billions of dollars up for grabs here.
That's what I mean.
Billions.
So they implemented this from March 31st.
Just like that. This went out last week.
Yeah, this is thin.
This is a way to literally, whoever has ISO, there's no shot you're going to be able to get this by March 31st. And this is when a lot of companies start bidding.
Yeah, the spring.
Right.
All the projects coming in.
How convenient the timing of this.
It's amazing how this is so designed. What luck.
Wow. What a coincidence. But, you know, what does this mean? Like, some people will argue that, you know, when you have price fixing and collusion and manipulation and stuff like that, that's a really good way to charge more money and raise the price. Even with Trudeau's recent announcement, $40 billion super railway from here to Montreal. Oh,
that high speed, that will never happen.
Oh, it's going to be a boondoggle. Yeah. They can barely build the LRT, let alone a high speed train.
That's what I mean.
But it's priced out at $133 million per kilometer.
Someone brought up a good point. You're going to spend that just on the consulting to begin the project.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised.
Because Toronto is famous for hiring consultants to tell you what not to do.
Yeah.
So you'll spend that whole amount just on prep.
Yeah, and listen, and it's if such only the companies bidding on these projects have the blue check mark or the orange check mark, and now what the city of Toronto is saying, well, you have to have the blue check mark plus. Right, so
I wonder which politicians are actually got speed dial David Blaine and David Copperfield and all the other magicians out there, because they're like pulling off some serious rabbits out of these hats.
Oh, man. Yeah, man. Things are magically appearing and disappearing really quick.
Months ago, Ford talked about the tunnel across the 401.
$60 billion.
Yeah, so we're talking about now high-speed rail in Canada? Really?
Well, the reality,
2025, high-speed rail?
Manny, the reality is this. If the construction industry, which is made up of renovations, right?
Yeah.
Which is made up of new residential, which is made up of commercial, which is made up of federal and municipal and provincial construction and stuff like that. Infrastructure. What does that mean? If half of those sectors are being wiped out right now, not wiped out, but let's say greatly reduced. Greatly reduced. The government has no choice during a recession to dump billions into the infrastructure. Why? Because they have to keep, it's almost like a bailout for construction. Right. So,
but it doesn't solve the real problems.
Well, listen,
it creates bigger problems.
The job is not to solve problems here. The job is to dump billions. And from the perspective, my perspective of looking and trying to guess what the politician's perspective is let's dump billions of dollars.
This is a backdoor deal. This is wrong. It should never have been approved.
What's going to end up happening here is that there's going to be such a patchwork and framework of municipalities that accept one thing or don't accept the other, and nothing is going to be consistent. There's billions of dollars on the line here, and this association is playing a really interesting game of, are we credible or not? Because on the street level, safety professionals and stuff like that, when you have an association that keeps on moving the goalposts in an apparent effort to control
who gets
these projects and the bidding that goes on, you start losing credibility. The perception is that this is not about safety. 100%. To complete the people that don't even understand, well, I'm not saying you don't understand, many, but you're not in this
at
world.
Face value, I'm looking at this going, no, this isn't right, and I know exactly why this is being forced upon the industry. Yep.
So there was an interesting, and I found it on Instagram, which was funny, but there was an interesting meeting or presentation, I guess.
Recently?
That happened this week. I think it may have been Wednesday. Today's Friday. So, but when everybody watching it, this happened last week.
Got it.
But, so basically what it was put on by Tarba, and you can find them on their Instagram at Tarba_CA, which is the Road Builders Association. And, you know, they had all their employers and representatives of those employers at this presentation. And basically it was talking about 45,001 and CORE and a bit of a comparison between the two, right? So, you know, anybody who's watching this, feel free to screenshot and freeze and take a look. I'm not going to go through.
So they all posted of, that. This compare. No,
this. Excuse me. If you go and look at their Instagram post, they posted the picture of the panel. They posted the members of the panel, which was made up of individuals from the IHSA, SCC, Cobalt Safety, Kevin Brown, and a few other safety directors from a variety of different employers. And basically it was, let's talk about ISO and let's talk about CORE. But if you look strictly at this chart, ISO 45001 versus CORE comparison, I would say that 45 ISO is hands down the best accreditation program. But again, that's just my opinion. You know, so
it makes you wonder why we even need CORE?
No, listen, different flavors, different folks. You know, I like going to Baskin and Robbins and having 31 flavors of ice cream. You don't just want vanilla and chocolate. But that being said, you know, companies should be able to pick what's best for them. And what's happening now is that, by the looks of it, what's happening with the city of Toronto, it's not about what the employers pick what's best for them. It's you need to pick this one or you will not bid on these projects.
Yeah, you won't get work.
Right? So I think that's where the credibility issue is. How can we say it's about safety if we're the city of Toronto is saying we want something more than the Ministry of Labor is asking for? You know, like, let's get realistic here.
It smells like a duck.
It's definitely leading to a lot of questions in terms of how this association is handling this issue. And yes, this association has a vested interest in CORE succeeding in this province. Why? Because they get millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. Not from the government, but they generate millions of dollars.
From their client list?
From CORE.
Huh.
Right? So this is a not-for-profit company.
Oh, God. Don't even get me started on the definition of non-for-profit.
No, there's non-for-profit a lot of non-for-profits. We make tons of profit and just don't tell you.
No, we make tons of profit. We just don't pay our share of taxes.
Oh, that works too.
Right? That's why, because we're non-for-profit, right? Everybody that's working here?
Yeah,
especially the executives.
I don't know. But listen, one thing's for sure.
The shit show continues. And you know what's funny is that the word safety has not been shared during this entire fucking thing.
Well, listen,
it's not really about safety.
I didn't have the pleasure of being at this.
Would they have invited you? At this
presentation. Would they have invited me? I don't know. Listen,
Kevin was there.
Kevin was sitting on the panel, man.
Wow.
He's the ISO, I don't know, ambassador maybe? Maybe that's a good word for him.
Influencer?
Influencer, yeah.
Yeah, sure. They have influencers now?
I guess so.
So he was paid to be there.
No, I'm not speaking for Kevin. But that, again,
I'm messy.
Coming back to this issue though, you know, this needs to get cleared up and needs to get cleared up quick because there's billions of dollars on the line.
It ain't going
to
get, once they get their contracts, the ones that impose this, that's when it's going to get cleared up. We're already working. We got the job. We don't care anymore.
Yeah, you're right.
Until the next hurdle.
You're right.
I'm telling you, that's why it's being done. It's being done because literally going, you got to pick one of these, but you're going to pick this one.
Yeah.
You got to pick one of these, but you're going to pick this one. Yeah. That's what's going on
here. That's exactly what it is.
Once they get the job.
Yeah. And, you know, how is that competition? How is that fair?
Tendering, it dismisses the word tendering.
Yeah, no.
It's not fair. A lot of companies are starting to build businesses that want to compete and be fair. That's what the industry is supposed to be about.
Yeah, this is just
young companies that come into this industry, see where the faults are, improve on those faults, and then present better packages that will benefit the people of this city, province,
100%.
Country. That's what they're doing.
And keep
this, but that's what they're not doing here.
Keep this in mind, man. This is only 700 companies out of easy 500,000 construction companies
across Canada,
across Ontario. We're not even talking
Ontario.
About Ontario. Yeah. Right. So yeah, you can be self-employed and have a construction company. Some of these CORE companies and ISO companies, they got 6, 7, 8 companies. Right. But listen, this to me,
that's interesting that just recently happened
this week, but let's see how it all plays out. For me, I just grab my popcorn and like watching, and I, you know, don't get me wrong, safety is what is the important thing here. And
yeah, but it's being forgotten here.
Well, yeah, especially when the focus is billions and billions of dollars on the line here, right? Is safety in the forefront here, or is this more about cronyism than anything else?
That's what it is, man.
Listen, it is what it is, man. But
no, I never say that. It is. It could be completely different. The only problem is that you'll be under concrete.
Well, hey.
If you try to make it different.
No, you got to speak up against these things, man. And I think now is a really important time to ask the questions and figure out, like, even with CORE, for example, it's been around for 10 years. We got all kinds of data on it, et cetera, et cetera. Can someone out there please prove to me that a CORE company is safer than a non-CORE company?
That data is not out there.
There was a study done in British Columbia 15 years ago on CORE, and it turned out it was 7%. It made the company 7% or 9% safer or something along those lines. But again, who paid for the study?
CORE. Right? That's my guess.
It's a good guess. Right? So we have, and I think from a credibility standpoint, if the IHSA wants to sell this product and say it's the best product in town, they should prove it. They should show the data.
Show no, their objective is to sell it first, not to prove it.
Well, listen, it's already been sold. It's already...
That's what I mean.
It's
so they've achieved their objective.
Right. But again...
It's unfortunate.
I'd still like to see some data. If a CORE company, do they have the same amount of contraventions? Do they have the same amount of injuries? Do they have the same amount of investigations? Do they have the same number of LTIs? What is the difference here?
They're not.
What are the metrics?
They're not even asked to present that?
I don't know. I feel like I just did.
I know. But the thing is, you figured that would come up in the discussions.
Well, yeah.
But it never was.
Maybe it has. Maybe it hasn't.
Because you weren't privy to the conversation.
There's been plenty of these debates and discussions and stuff like that. But I think what we need to focus on is safety, right? Are you doing what you say you're supposed to be doing? Are you complying with the law? Right? And I get it. These accreditation programs are for, like, you know, whoever's approving these tenders or these bids or whatever it may be from a municipality or from their standpoint, they don't know anything about safety. They need... Some type of reassurance.
Bodies that that's their profession,
right? And that's what they're turning around to the associations that know about safety and say, okay, what do we need to do? Like, do you trust someone on Instagram that has a blue check mark? And that's all it comes down to. Do you have this blue check mark? Do you have this orange check mark? Right. That's all it really comes down to.
Having a blue check mark doesn't. Having a Homestar's logo on your van doesn't make you a better contractor. The work that you do today makes you a better contractor.
No, hey, listen, in my business is the same. There's a lot of these safety companies that is like, oh, we're getting this award and we're getting that award and we're getting this
shit. Awards are paid for.
That's the thing too, right? Like, half of these guys are getting awards because they bought them.
They did buy them.
Even in construction, you're the Homestars. Don't you have to pay for that?
Yeah.
So you're getting an award for paying a bill? I don't get it, man.
But that's how it is. Small or big construction, same way. Temporary construction stairs. What are we talking about?
All right, here?
We're back on stairs now?
Let's change the channel.
Why did we go back to stairs?
Why are we on stairs? Because on one of our last podcasts, we talked about stairs and the design and construction of stairs, and I said I wasn't sure if in the regulations...
construction stairs, not finished stairs.
Temp stairs.
Temp stairs, yes. Yeah.
Temp stairs. So, I said I wasn't sure if there were specific regulations that dealt with the design and construction of stairs. I know there's specific regulations on stairs, but the design and construction, just the way there is for ladders, just the way there is for railings.
There's specifics for everything.
Yes. So just to make it very clear, temporary stairs and landings shall be designed, constructed, and maintained to support a live load of 4.8 kilonewtons per square meter without exceeding the allowable unit stresses for each material used. You're trying to figure out what 4.8 kilonewtons
is? No, I can't believe that. Okay, so how do they calculate that?
That's a good question. Engineering, I'm guessing.
Okay, all right. And how are you going to test that on a job site?
That's also a good question.
That's why I'm shaking my head.
No work shall be performed. Again, I'm... briefly going through this.
Yeah, no. Everyone, there's a bunch of specifications. You want, what's the number again? You've got the link
76, there. 77, deal with it, 78.
There you go. Now you got those the numbers, now you can read it for yourself.
Yeah, yes. Those sections of the regulations.
You want to fall asleep real quick, read it. All right.
Nah, come on, man. This shit's exciting. Stairs shall have a clear width of at least 500 millimeters.
Oh, man, metric.
Treads and risers of uniform width, length, and height. Subject to subsection 3, stringers with a maximum slope of 50 degrees from the horizontal.
I'm surprised that in B, they didn't give you a variance, a tolerance, I mean. Treads and risers of uniform width, length, and height.
Mm-hmm.
Within what? 2 mil, 3 mil, 1/8 inch?
Uniform, Manny, uniform. Don't.
I know, I'm just, but they're being specified here. Then let's get specific.
Maybe not too specific.
Okay, all right.
Otherwise, so we're going to have everyone walking around with measuring tape saying you're 2 millimeters off.
Well, the Finnish inspectors do it. Maximum slope of 50 degrees.
Where are you?
The C.
Wait. We're on D.
D.
Landings right. That are less than 4.5 meters apart measured vertically.
4.5 meters apart measured
vertically. From landing to landing.
Got it. Okay.
Securely fastened and supported wooden handrail on the open sides of each flight and a guardrail on the tops. On the open side of each landing. Then it goes into the stringers of prefabricated stairs inside a tower formed by scaffold frame section shall have a maximum slope of 60 degrees. Wooden handrails shall be free of loose knots, sharp edges, splinters, and shakes. You know, I had an inspector once tell one of my supervisors that they should sand down the guardrails and the railings because of splinters.
Of the temp stairs.
Just wooden 2x4. You got to sand it down because you might get a splinter from it. So not even joking, man. Skeleton steel stairs shall have temporary wooden treads securely fastened in place that are made up of suitable planking extending the full width and breadth of the stairs and the landings. And it goes on and on. But that being said,
it didn't really answer my questions.
There are some specifications for stairs.
There are, but they're not very specific.
That's very specific.
There's right? A little bit of, well, then why is that inspector asking for shit to be sanded down?
Because it's right there in that regulation.
Because the knots?
Dude, what do you want me to tell you? It's a regulation.
I know, but it's...
Can you get a ticket for doing 105 on the 401, Manny? Yes, you can.
Loose knots, sharp edges, splinters, and shakes.
And there's another regulation that deals with protruding hazards and stuff like that, too, and splinters and...
Really? Anyways,
yeah.
No, man. There isn't.
Yeah. Anyway, the gist of it is you can't have splinters. Stop, Manny.
Wow. Okay.
Wait, you don't walk around with sandpaper in your pocket and sand down every single...
I'm not the Finnish carpenter.
No.
Okay. And then if I try to take some from the Finnish carpenter, he's going to get upset.
All right.
What are we doing here?
So...
Oh, you're still on stairs.
No.
No, guardrails.
So this little component here... I think it was last week or a couple of weeks ago, we asked some questions, our Instagram followers, what kind of questions do you want us to answer? Or do you have any questions that you want us to answer? So these are a couple of questions that we got. And I thought maybe we should answer them.
Okay, what did DCAT underscore 71, what?
So I blocked out the name, he put the name of a construction company, but I blocked it out. So DCAT underscore 71, what do you think of Blank's implementation of their new 6-foot tie-off rule? So this builder is actually a couple builders. They changed the internally. So.
Not as per MOL.
So what do the regulations say? So so this builder implemented a new 6-foot tie-off rule. Let's first take a look at what the law says. What the law says is that you, at 8 feet, you're required to have a guardrail system.
Yep.
If it's on a floor, a bridge, a scaffold, work platform, roof where false works in place, etc. So at 8 feet, you need guardrails.
Yeah.
Keep this in mind. If you are installing a guardrail system, you need to be tied off. Right?
Yeah.
Because I'm putting a guardrail there because there's a fall hazard.
Yeah.
So I need to be tied off.
I got it.
But if I cannot install a guardrail system or I'm in an area that's other than those other areas, floor, bridge, scaffold, blah, blah, then at 10 feet, I need to be tied off. So think about this. I'm on a ladder. Okay. My feet go above 10 feet on this ladder. I got to go install a light, do an electrician, a plumber, something. Okay. My feet are at greater than 10 feet. Then what the law says is you need to be tied off, protected against falling.
Explain how that happens. Where do you tie off? How do you tie off?
Also, very good question.
You got to climb up the ladder untied off.
So here, comes down to answering this question. So this builder, what they did was, as soon as you pass 6 feet, you need to be tied off.
Again, so how do you tie off?
Right. So let's take one of my clients. They're a plumbing company. They have to hang up pipe, et cetera, et cetera. Some of these ceilings are extremely high, but let's run this. I go up the ladder. I'm the worker. I got to go up there and I got to drill a couple shots in to do whatever. I go up. My boots, and this is where it's measured from, the bottom of my boots, are at 7 feet, okay, which is above the 6 foot rule. The law does not require me to tie off, but this rule, this builder's project
rule,
requires me to be tied off. So let's take the scenario first before the 6 foot rule. I climb up to 7 feet. I do my job. I am exposed to a fall.
Yeah.
Once. Yeah. I go up, I drill in my shots, I hang whatever I do. I come back down, pick up my ladder, move to the next spot. I am exposed to the fall once.
The other scenario.
Let's do the other scenario now. 6 feet. So I climb up that ladder. My boots are at 7 feet. Company says, builder says, you have to tie off. Sure. Boom, boom, boom. I drill in an anchor. Okay, I'm not tied off. I have to go higher up. I drill in the anchor. Now I tie off. Okay. Now I do my work at 7 feet. I am following the rules of the builder. I've exposed myself to a fall once at this stage. Finish doing my work. I go up again. I unclip myself. Now I am exposed to that fall again. I come back down the ladder. I move and I do the exact same thing.
Over again.
10 times.
You're exposed twice as many times now.
Here's the question. Who's going back to remove the anchors and fix the holes I just drilled into the concrete ceiling?
But the person who put it in.
Right. So now I have to go back again, climb up my ladder 7 feet or even higher. I'm not tied off because my number one purpose of going there is to remove my anchor. So now I am not tied off.
This is stupid.
So I am exposing myself to the chance or the risk of falling, the hazard of falling, more than I need to.
Yeah.
I've increased my chance or my risk by 100%. And I like to keep this also in mind, Manny. 6 feet tie off. Yes, you can die at 6 feet. You can fall at 6 feet. Let's just do it at 6 feet. Great. The playground in my neighborhood, they have a whole section that is missing guardrails because that's the access point to the, you know, the pole, the fireman pole. The kids come down.
They got rid of that?
Well, yeah. How do you get on the fireman pole if there's a guardrail there? Yeah. So we have an open. That is greater than 6 feet. It's at 8 feet. So are we saying we're sending our kids to playgrounds to play in playgrounds that do not have a guardrail or is missing a guardrail at 8 feet, but then we're taking adults that are construction workers with training, experience, and competency, putting them on a construction project and saying, hey, at 6 feet, you got to tie off, even though your kids are at the playground and they're not protected at 8 feet?
Playground ground is sand or something soft. Construction site ground is generally concrete.
Can you die from falling at 8 feet?
Sure. Of course you can.
Can you die from 6 feet? Sure. Of course can you die at 4 feet? Sure.
Of course.
Right? But again, it comes down to odds and probability and risk and that hazard.
So what's the solution here? Everyone gets into a lift?
Listen, and that's what I'm sure they would like to push, right? If you can eliminate fall hazards, that'd be great.
But even with the lifts, we now know for a fact that you have to be tied off regardless if it's stationary or moving. Yeah. So you're still tied off, but you can access that point. So you don't need to have you're tied off to the machine. You're not tied off to the structure.
No, you're tied off to the machine.
Yeah. So right? the solution is a lift.
So
now electricians get into lifts.
Yeah.
Plumbers get into lifts. They don't want to do that.
Well, listen, you're eliminating ladders, and electricians and plumbers probably use ladders the most, drywallers too, but maybe just.
Drywallers using the stilts, right?
I haven't seen stilts in a while on a
job site. No, they're constantly using them. I saw a guy right now, like a 5 foot.
Did they have double layered guardrails?
No.
They could just walk right over the guardrail.
Exactly.
Yeah. And listen, I don't
agree with that.
Foot tie off rule, I think maybe in some scenarios where, okay, it's 6 feet, there's a drop, let's install a guardrail system. I'm sure that's great. Right. But when you apply it to other scenarios, it might not work as well and may be creating more problems than solutions.
So what's the best solution in this scenario?
Listen, you have to take a look at the works being that's taken place. If you're going to be doing something repetitively from ladders, you know, you may want to consider not doing it from ladders because ladders aren't the safest way to do it.
Lift.
Right? A lift is always the best way to do it. But again, budget constraints or cheapness or whatever you want to call it, or I don't know. If some people will do it, some people won't do it. Is this going to be effective? I doubt it. I think this is more for show than anything else.
Hey. Right? HVC.
You know these guys?
Yeah, I know these guys. He was in here. We're having a con. He doesn't want to get on the show.
No?
He's just a little nervous about saying certain things, that's all.
Yeah, well.
Hey. Some people are nervous about saying certain things about which other people finding out.
Which is great. Hey,
look at me. No, it's just good to see him there. I agree. I think in that situation, you start bidding and you start factoring in lifts. I think lifts are the solution in that situation because you're always right. You've said it over and over. First, last, always untied, not safe.
Yeah.
No matter the scenario, no matter the job site.
Right. So again, this might work for some situations. If 6 foot
works, I think that actually creates more problems. A lot
again,
more
depending on the scenario. If we're just talking about a floor, I need a guardrail over there.
So what do you think? Because this person is asking you, what do you think? Do you agree with it or not think or not agree with it?
I'm telling you, in some scenarios, yeah, this makes sense. And in a lot of other scenarios, it does not make sense at all. And I've personally addressed this with the builder, a specific builder, regarding this and regarding one of my clients and explaining to them and asking them, how does this make sense if my worker is going to be exposed to double the falls and this and that? And this goes above and beyond what and the what requirements. Was the response? If you like it, you like it. If you don't like it, you don't have to do it, Philip. To the client. Bottom line. Right? Yeah, okay, thanks, man.
That ain't going to get double jeopardy points there.
Well,
that's
hey, listen, man. Answer. The reality is that these constructors are the ones paying the bills. And if the constructor says everyone's going to wear safety glasses at all times, then everyone's going to wear safety glasses at all times. And if everyone has to wear a pink hard hat, then everyone's going to wear a pink hard hat because these sure build. But you know what I mean.
Nobody steals them. Yeah, that's why I like them. Oh, all right, man. What do we do? What's this one?
Next one, residential projects. Why does it seem safety isn't enforced? This one's an easy one. Two main reasons. A, the constructor does not file a notice of project with the Ministry of Labor so they can stay under the radar. Number one.
Yeah.
Number two, based on the number of infill residential projects, it is nearly impossible for Ministry of Labor inspectors to even address 10% of them, let alone all 100%.
Because you were saying there's less than 5 inspectors for how many projects?
Actually, I just found out the other day that the Toronto office has 18 vacancies.
Oh, they're left,
and they're hiring for 18 inspectors, not just construction, but industrial, I think, also.
Will they hire like celebrity inspectors? Like, well, I'll just go in for
like
a day.
Like Gordon Ramsay or something?
No, just for a day. I'll go in for a day.
They're going to deputize you?
Yeah,
for Manny, a day. You'd look at all the paperwork you'd have to study and figure out.
No, I don't want
to
do any of that. No. Get me on the job site.
Yeah, no.
I want to start pointing fingers, yelling at people.
You'd probably be you'd hold the record for getting punched out the least amount of time on a job site.
I'd be in the hospital going, it's in the shape of a shovel.
Oh my God.
That's what it is.
Someone planted a 2x4 in the back of your head.
I'm not a robot.
So basically,
okay, yeah, you got good points.
That's the ultimate reason.
They want to fly under the radar.
Yeah. That's like why. I've gone to, I've laid some charges in some of these builders and residential projects and stuff like that. And yeah, no NOP, no this, no that, no documentation. Everything is cash, da 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 da, blah, 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 blah. You know how it goes. Right?
I'll bring up one more point on that one.
Sure.
I think it's the money. Yeah. I think a lot of the sub trades, a lot of the crews, a lot of the tradespeople factor in a certain price. And if you start implementing all these safety things, it's not factored into their price. So then they're not going to be profitable.
Yeah. Can you imagine how
they're
much
cutting corners, and the first corners they cut are safety corners.
Let's look at a low rise
safety corner.
cut the safety. You made it rhyme.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. I think that's what it is. It's the money.
Well, yeah, no, money definitely plays an important role in safety. Now think about this. You're a low-rise builder. Let's say you're building 500 houses. How much money are you spending on 2x4s just for guardrails?
That's a lot of money.
Right?
I know. And you're definitely going to pick the hockey sticks, so now you're going to get fined with the splinters and the nuts. I'm just saying, it's a money thing. I think in residential, it's a money thing.
Listen, safety is always a money thing. Yeah. You can look at vehicles, for example. Why do some vehicles have higher safety ratings than others? Because they're designed to.
Yeah.
And they spend more money doing it, right? Why is Volvo rated as the best, you know? And then you look at, I think it was the Bronco that I was looking at. this thing gets into an accident, it collapses like an aluminum can.
The new one?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's retro.
Yeah, but
I'd rather have an old.
I don't even. It's not even a steel frame. It's an aluminum frame. This whole thing gets into a. It has the worst safety rating.
Should change it to pony, not Bronco.
I don't know, but the bottom line is
Shetland pony.
You have vehicles that have a lower safety rating, and then you have vehicles that have a higher safety rating
because they take the risk,
right? But they sell them. They sell them the same.
I know.
Hi, we're selling you a vehicle that has a lower safety rating than the average. Good luck.
Speaking of which, just on a side note, real quick, someone went to the auto show recently because it was just happened.
Yeah.
And apparently now all SUVs, full size and pickup trucks are all over $100,000 now, just like the standard.
I don't know how.
140, 150.
That entire market is failing. No, there's cars on lots left, right, and center.
Who contractor-wise out there is spending six figures plus on a Suburban or a pickup truck? Man. Who the hell is doing that?
Kijiji for life. But me personally, I would never buy a used car.
No, you would get a new one, reasonable price.
A used one, reasonable price.
But you just said you wouldn't buy a used car.
I would never buy a new car.
Oh, new car.
Never,
sorry.
Never. Never.
No.
You drive it off the lot. It's down 10% already.
But I don't understand all these trucks and the cost of these trucks, these sticker price. I don't get it.
I think...
I remember haggling for $3,000 for a pickup truck.
Like, my first car was a Chevrolet Cavalier. Yeah. I bought it for $1,000.
Yeah.
Lasted me years.
It had ticky-ticky-ticky-ticky sound. You had to change a few things. Yeah, but it worked. Every morning you started, you're like, okay, is it going to go? But okay, this is a video.
We got a bit of both here. So let's just kind of recap on what this is. So this week, a supervisor was charged with criminal negligence. Not charged, sorry. Found guilty and sentenced. Sorry, let me rephrase that again. Was found guilty last year, and was sentenced this week. So this is in a nutshell. Driver of a dump truck reports to his employer and his supervisor there's a steering issue with this dump truck. And this is just what I've managed to glance off of the news. There was an issue with the steering of the dump truck. The supervisor said, yeah, I'll take a look at it. Yeah, there's no problems with it. Puts out the dump truck the next day. The driver that voiced their concerns about the dump truck with steering and something or other somehow gets into a fatal car accident and dies. Okay? So they do the investigation. Ministry of Labor did the investigation. Ministry of Labor did not lay any charges under the Occupational Health and Safety Act. This because it's a vehicle accident that happens on a highway or a road.
MTO.
Falls under MTO, OPP, etc.
Yeah.
Right? So the Ministry of Labor did a preliminary investigation and then, nope, this is not our jurisdiction. Hand it off. So that being said, the enforcement agency laid criminal negligence charges to the supervisor, saying that the supervisor should have known
there was an issue.
Issue with the vehicle, and then when they did an investigation, the left tire was completely bald or something like that. The supervisor, we have a video. It's from City TV News, I think, or CTV News. This was up in Barrie. It's a couple minutes, but let's watch and take a look.
8-year-old Milton Ojeles was sentenced to 5 years in prison by Justice Mary Valley before being led away in handcuffs. Ojeles was convicted in July of criminal negligence causing the death of 53-year-old Denny Gagnon, a dump truck driver who worked for him the day the truck he was driving blew a tire and crashed into a ditch, killing him instantly. Ojeles, who admitted to being Gagnon's supervisor, was found to have ignored Gagnon's concerns about an issue with the dump truck steering the night prior to the crash. Ojeles testified he checked the truck's steering and blamed the crash on driver error. Justice Valley, in delivering her sentencing decision, said Ojeles bears a high degree of moral culpability for this grave offense, saying if the truck was taken to a mechanic, it would not have been on the road that day and the collision would not have happened. Gagnon was killed before noon September 22nd, 2020, when his dump truck left the road along the Azula-Toronto-Tecumseh town line. The truck's front left tire was found to have very little tread on it, and an expert testified it should not have been on the road that day. The Crown called Ojeles morally corrupt, saying he put money above all else, arguing Ojeles ignored warnings and sent a man to his death. The Crown asked Ojeles be sentenced to 6 years in custody. The defense asked Ojeles be given a conditional sentence of 2 years less a day under house arrest. Prior to being sentenced, Ojeles apologized again to the court and the family of Denny Gagnon, saying, may God forgive me once again. Gamal was a husband and father of a young boy living on the autism spectrum. His widow threw a victim impact statement describing traumatized and left in financial peril. The judge highlighted Mujeres' egregious commercial vehicle operator record, noting several violations, fines, and poor record keeping. The judge said Mujeres should not have been training anybody to drive a commercial vehicle. His wife, who owned the company, along with loved ones, hugged Mujeres before leaving the courthouse, declined to comment on the sentence. Upon his release from custody, Mujeres is banned from having weapons on him for life. Mike Arsley, CTV News, Barry.
Don't ask me about the weapons.
So I don't understand why they bring up the tire because, okay, so what was the issue actually?
Well,
it looks like from this thing is that he had a full load. He lost control of the vehicle, went into a ditch, and that load basically compressed the cab against whatever he hit. Looked like a tree.
Sure. Yeah, listen, we're trying to figure this out from one picture. You know, by the sounds of it, the worker had an issue with the vehicle. The worker communicated that issue with a supervisor. The supervisor had a duty, responsibility, and obligation to ensure the safety of the vehicle. And I think vehicle safety is really coming at the spotlight now in terms of MTO and safety. Enforcement. Yeah. Commercial vehicles, CVOR. You know, all of this is getting thrust in the spotlight just because of the issues that we're having on the roads regarding drivers, regarding the condition of some of these vehicles. I think it was an MTO stop. They laid the last one, they laid 62 charges, took 7 vehicles off the road, some crazy thing like that. So you can imagine how many vehicles aren't probably in the best condition to be on our roads.
Yeah, and I'll say it again. I don't think 5 years is enough.
No, 5 years.
He took a life.
I know, but he
did he get fined too?
No, Ministry of Labor didn't.
There's no fine.
No.
No, but no MTO fine?
Not that I know of.
He just got jail.
Yeah.
Oh, that's definitely not enough.
Well, listen, Manny, I don't know if it's about being enough or not being enough. You know, I think there is definitely evidence that this supervisor showed a wanton and reckless disregard for the driver's safety.
Yeah.
Right? And I think you as a supervisor, you as a supervisor have an onus to protect the workers. You have an onus to ensure that the vehicle machinery equipment is in the best condition possible. And you have an onus to respond to any issues that workers bring to your attention regarding safety of anything. Right? And unfortunately, this worker lost his life. And by the sounds of it, it could have been prevented. But, you know, taking a dump truck off the road costs money. Lost revenue, right? And this is unfortunately one of the weighing factors when people determine safety, right?
It was mentioned that the business is in the wife's name. Is the business still operating?
I don't know. I'm guessing it is, right? They already got the person that they determined was responsible, right?
Wow. And he has a record of unsafe vehicles on the road.
Yeah.
This isn't the first time.
No, this doesn't
got away with it first, second, third, fourth.
Yeah, they probably caught some fines before. They probably had, who knows? Who knows? But
see, here's the situation. I would actually say that in this situation, the MOL should get involved regarding fines.
See,
if there's a conviction here through the MPO.
It comes down to jurisdiction. and it comes down to motor vehicles on highways. And ultimately, you know, this debate, it's a bit of a gray area. The MOL won't touch it. And I think one of the reasons the MOL won't touch it, because all of a sudden now you're going to get the MOL starting to investigate workplace deaths on highways and roads.
And I think they should.
I know, but they're not equipped for that, right? You need forensic reconstructive services. You might need a variety of different additional tools that the MOL doesn't have at their disposal.
And they don't even have the employees to do it.
Yeah, man. Like this would be another. And then this came up in one of my safety chat groups, and we were talking about this. And then we were talking about another case that happened back in 2012, where 10 migrants, 11 people died, but 10 migrants died in a motor vehicle accident. They're on the way from their residence to the farm that they were working on.
Oh, they're all carpooling.
It was all in a van.
Yeah.
Right? Toss everyone in a van and take them to the farm. And then they got hit by a car and all of the workers died. Right? And the MOL got involved a bit. But again, it becomes a motor traffic or vehicle incident. And that's what happens. They pass it off to the enforcement agency that has the most likelihood, the most experience, and the jurisdiction to handle those. Right? Like, But this definitely puts into question, you know, what's a workplace? Is your vehicle a workplace? I know if I'm working from my vehicle, majority of the time, is that my workplace?
Okay, so maybe you don't get the MOL to be jurisdiction with the MTO, but you give the same powers that the MOL has, which we've already expressed on the show several times, to the MTO. You start laying these fines then.
Different enforcement agencies have different powers, best suited for what they're enforcing. Right. So you start getting into different types of law, and, you know, like the Occupational Health and Safety Act is written a lot differently than criminal law. Right. And the onus and the responsibility, et cetera. So, again, this is just to highlight the fact that you as a supervisor, no matter what industry you're in, you can be charged for criminal negligence, period. And there's supervisors going to jail. For criminal negligence.
This one.
This one's so far the most that I've heard. 5 years. Right? So.
Oh, is this still running? Everything's still running. Yeah, but the person's gone. That's the shitty thing about it, right?
Yeah, of course.
But that's what I'm saying. It's never severe enough for me, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, even some comments that I've gotten, man, he's always ready to throw the book. He's ready to put 7 digits on in front of all of these fines. And I'm like, listen.
Why don't you just implement it? See what happens. I bet you any money, safety would get improved.
Well, again, the max fine under the Occupational Health and Safety Act is $2 million. But the average for fatality is $150,000. So there's some room there. All right? There is definitely some room there.
Change that 178 to 1.78.
Oh, you know what? That reminds me. Another outstanding item that that we talked about and I wasn't sure, but I ended up getting an answer to. If you are a company and you have insurance, which I think most companies are supposed to, right? If you have insurance, that insurance will not cover any fines issued by an enforcement agency. So if you're a company and you get dinged $150,000 for a workplace fatality.
Why would it?
I think it was one of the outstanding questions we had on a previous show.
There's no reason why an insurance company would cover any fines of you illegally doing things.
I'm just saying, man.
No, I know. The insurance is there for liability and other reasons, but it's not there for you breaking the MOL laws.
Well, hey, listen. In this case, for example, do you think the insurance covered, you know,
someone? Of course not.
Well, it's a vehicle accident. The insurance had to cover something. They had to cover fixing the vehicle.
So right? Do you think the insurance paid out to the victim?
No. Maybe. Who knows? In this case,
each truck has to have a third-party liability.
There you go. So now you have this scenario with a supervisor.
But commercial would have been what? I know personal vehicles are capped out at 1 million, or is it 2 million?
I think it's 2.
2 million? Commercial's got to be higher. Is it
way higher?
5 million?
I bet 5.
So do you think that the insurance of the truck covered the victim?
Maybe the insurance did give a settlement. Who knows? See, this is another unique scenario. Well, no, I won't say unique, but this is another.
MTO, it's Highway Traffic Act.
Right.
It's an accident. So it's a.
So now the insurance.
It's not an accident, it's a collision. It's never an accident. It's always preventable.
Right. But again, I think the question from the previous episode was, will the insurance cover your fines?
No, you got to read that.
Yeah, the answer is no.
I love telling clients that when you get a flood in the basement, you got to make sure that your insurance covers that.
Oh, that's a lot of fine print.
That's a fine print situation.
Remind me to tell you the story once when I had to fight State Farm because a drunk driver drove their car into my house. Not like inside the house where the engine and the vehicle was in the living room. That's an old other story.
There's a great movie that I've seen like that, man. Called Dead Man Down.
Yeah. Anyways, Manny, that's a wrap, man.
All right, Phil, that was good, man. Always ends on a downer, but I still think that he should be life imprisonment. That's my take on it. He'll never do it again. You don't think that guy will get out in 5 years and you don't think that he'll do it exactly the same way? He'll have another employee come up to him and go, listen, there's something wrong with the tires.
You'd like to think no. I would like to think no. I would like to think that 5 years in jail is a good wake-up call, right? But
lifetime in jail is a great wake-up call. You never get woken up. You just stay there. Something like that. That's what I mean.
Listen, I don't know. But I think it's good to see this type of fines, these types of sentencing.
Sure, it starts to show the industry, listen, this is what could happen.
Yeah, you need a couple of precedent-setting situations so that everyone kind of understands where the parameters are.
It's a shame. But, even in the video, I was just judging him physically. It doesn't seem like he was remorseful. Walking around there with his pleather.
It's hard to judge a book by its cover.
I don't know.
But I guess it's very easy. These days, it's very easy to judge a book by its cover.
Okay. That's all right. Thanks, man. We're out of here.
You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1. For workers, by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10-plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.